Okay, so just wanted to have kind of a catch up about what happened in the past couple of days. I think probably everybody is familiar at this point, but just wanted to go through quickly kind of what happened, my thoughts, and then open it up for any questions, try to draw some conclusions from this. So for those who aren't aware, what kind of started a couple of days ago turned into a big catastrophe in crypto today. But it started with Alameda, which is kind of FTX's partner hedge fund, more or less, that they work with. They had their balance sheet exposed or kind of leaked, and that gave way to a lot of FUD about FTX overall as a whole. This kind of escalated a day or so later, which I think was like yesterday or 2 days ago, when CZ basically tweeted that he was going to be liquidating all of his FTT, all of Binance's FTT holdings, which is quite a lot. And this sort of further added to all the FUD that happened. This led to a huge amount of kind of uncertainty about whether FTX was even solvent or basically what was going on. So a ton of people started withdrawing from FTX. SBF went on Twitter yesterday to completely deny all of these rumors. And yet still people kept withdrawing. Who knows what happened kind of behind the scenes, but TLDR, the price of FTT, which is FTX's token, dropped a ton. And then kind of the most sketchy thing was that SBF didn't say anything for like 24 hours. And then I'm sure you've all seen this at this point, but just for anybody who hasn't, today there was the extremely surprising and shocking news that FTX is being sold to Binance, it seems like, or is at least in serious financial distress because they wouldn't have done this otherwise. So that's kind of what happened. I had a couple takeaways based off of this. I think first is that brand is extremely important in crypto. I think brand is almost everything in crypto, especially for an exchange. I think I have been underestimating the importance of brand for quite a while. And I think that's kind of evidenced in what we've been doing in DYDX as well. I think our brands, and we all have some idea of this, but I think we should just kind of define a little bit more. I would define our brand as trust, transparency, safety, and innovation, some combination of those things. And I think it's extremely important that we just continue to focus on brand and really prioritize it above other things. And I think it comes down mostly to decision-making, mostly by myself, but this is mostly a note for me, but I think it's worth saying for everybody. I think brand is so important. And I think you see that really evidenced in what happened with FTX, where FTX was also really built on brands, right? That was how they really rose to prominence off kind of the back of SBF. And when you see that brand start to take a hit, like I didn't put this in the deck, but there was a bunch of FUD last week about SBF basically commenting that DeFi should be regulated more or less. And people started jumping on him for that. I think CZ kind of sensed weakness in FTX and SBF there and really jumped in. And I think then you saw FTX's brand start to fall apart in a big way. And that basically was the end of FTX, very surprisingly. And I think it's just funny how quickly these things both can be built and can unravel. So I think we've done an okay job on brand so far. I think we have a pretty good brand in crypto, but I think we need to focus on it a lot more. And I also think we have sort of a unique opportunity to build a really good brand in crypto, because all the things that kind of all the rest of these exchanges purport themselves to be, like safe, transparent, you know, prioritize the safety of user funds first and foremost. Like, we literally do all those things because we're in DeFi, right? It's like, we're totally transparent. Like, just go look on chain. Like, of course, we adhere to the highest security standards, like all of these things. So like, we're already doing all the right things. I think we just need to kind of say the right things as well, and make sure that that is always really highly prioritized in our decision making. So that was kind of my first takeaway. The second takeaway I had, and I titled it like bull market demigods, but basically the point of this is everybody really held SBF up as kind of a demigod of crypto, and not just crypto, but just business in general, right? Like, how does this guy come out of literally nowhere? and create this massive $40 billion company in just a few years. Like, it's definitely possible, but you kind of look at that and you're like, you know, holy shit, like, how can we possibly compete with that? And I think, you know, everybody can think whatever they want, but I think the main issue was that I kind of believed it too. You know, I look it up to him and I think like, holy shit, like, how is he getting FTX to execute so fast? Like, I want, you know, DYDX to be like that. How can we make DYDX more like FTX? And I think some of those things were totally real and reasonable. Like, I would still like DYDX to execute it as fast as FTX at least has in the past. But I think the point here, like, is that there aren't really demigods. There are just like people that are making choices and that are kind of making moves in the game. And SBF had a lot going for him. Like, he was an amazing entrepreneur, still is. He just made some moves and took some risks that he shouldn't have taken. And he kind of flew too close to the sun. So yeah, I don't know if I'm explaining this super well, but like, I used to feel even like a couple hours ago, like a ton of fear. Like, how can I possibly be as good of a CEO as SBF can? And, you know, there's still always going to be people that are certainly better than me, but I think there are not so much of these like sort of infallible demigods in life overall. And that's kind of an important lesson too. And I think that means there's a big opportunity for us to go out and be able to compete as well. The other thing that I just have really been trying to think in the past couple hours over what's been happening and kind of rationalize my thoughts around it is that I am just maybe completely convinced that DeFi will win. And similar to my point on the previous slide, I've been feeling similar fear for this for a while now, like not a ton of fear, but some fear, where it's like, you know, how can we compete with these DeFi giants that are just going crazy, like expanding the market, have so many resources, have so much going for them, have all the brand, have all the users. So that's the first thing. Like, what is the real probability that we'll win? Is like, you know, I always tell you guys, it's like 10 to 15% probability that we'll hit all our goals and become one of the biggest exchanges. Like, is that enough for me to be satisfied? Is that enough for all of you guys to be satisfied with? Like, I don't know. I'm not sure about that. And I used to think like, well, I think DeFi is going to be successful long-term, but I don't really have a great understanding of why exactly we're going to be super successful long-term. And I think this is kind of related to the previous point. Like, you look at these other companies, you look at these CEOs, if you're me, and you're like, wow, like, how can we possibly compete? Like, these guys seem infallible. But this is, you know, just a life lesson I think everybody learns, but this is really an explosive insight today where that's really not the case. And now I'm completely convinced that DeFi will win. And I think the reason for this is, especially after today with FTX, I'm just completely convinced that there are three possibilities for what you can build in crypto. You can build unregulated CeFi exchanges like FTX, like Binance International, et cetera. And I mean, this is not a proven point, but after today, I really, really believe it, that all of those things are destined to fail or explode in some way. And I think the reason for that is they just take on too much risk. And you may ask, well, like, why are they taking on so much risk? Why don't you just build something unregulated that has user safety first and foremost? And I think the problem with that is there's competition, that like the natural like Nash equilibrium or whatever is that there's going to be competition that doesn't do that. And I think Binance was the first really big example of this. I mean, there have been others in crypto even before Binance, like BitMEX, like Bitfinex, et cetera, that took a ton of market share. And they outcompeted things like other unregulated exchanges that weren't taking those risks, like regulated exchanges, which we'll get to, that, you know, also weren't taking those risks. So it's almost like if you want to be one of the biggest unregulated CeFi exchanges, at least in my mind, the thought I keep having today is like, you must do these things. Like, you must take these risks. Like, you must push the needle on what's kind of possible. Otherwise, you just won't be able to compete with the people that are doing that. And this isn't like a massively novel thought, but at least for us kind of like young people who are learning finance through crypto for the first time, I think it is useful to internalize that. And I think the financial markets and financial regulation in general has learned this lesson time and time again, where if you just let financial markets be unregulated, well, like, this is what happens. Like, things blow up. and they take too much risk when there's down markets. And I think crypto with centralized exchanges is no exception to that. So I'm not saying like Binance is gonna blow up tomorrow or even in the next few years, but like they have to be taking similar amounts of risk to what other centralized exchanges are taking, and everybody else who's unregulated, who's kind of competing on that level and with those products probably are as well. I do think that regulated CeFi is a totally valid and valuable thing to build. So like Coinbase being the prime example of this, but it's the same problem, right? Where if you're kind of holding yourself back because, you know, you're literally not allowed because of the regulation to do all these risky things, that regulation for the most part does a good job at mitigating. You just can't be competitive, right? And you see that with Coinbase's market share just dramatically falling against Binance's, FTX's, BitMEX's over the years. And I don't think that's likely to stop anytime soon. You may think, well, like, okay, like, will all of crypto turn into regulated CeFi? I don't think it will, because I don't think that any regulatory body has like enough reach to stop that. And the problem, and I think the reason that it's different in crypto versus traditional finance, is that it's so easy to build these crypto exchanges. I kind of learned some of this through being at Coinbase, but one of the really big ways that regulators exert their power in traditional finance is through the banks. And sort of like the banks are like the first bastion of like regulatory defense almost. Because like if you're doing something sketchy, the banks just like won't bank you. And in TradFi, like if the banks don't bank you, like that's it, like you're done. You can't do anything else. And it's hard to build a company in TradFi, but it's really easy to build these things in crypto. Like look how many centralized unregulated exchanges there are. It's probably like 1,000. And I don't think that this kind of whack-a-mole game is likely to stop anytime soon. And then of course there's DeFi. And I think DeFi is different. I mean, not all DeFi is going to be this way. Like some DeFi can also do sketchy things if it's not built in a like secure and transparent way. But let's just take kind of the end state of what we aspire for DeFi to be. I think it really can be an alternative to both of these other possibilities with unregulated CeFi and regulated CeFi. And I think that it's kind of the logical conclusion long-term for what will win. It just makes a lot of sense to me. Like if you can build these products that users want to trade, like perpetuals, for example, like let's take perpetuals, like users want to trade these products, like that is empirically proven. Like potentially some regulators might not want that to be the case, but it is. And as evidenced by my previous points, like users will find ways to trade and do things that they want to do. And empirically, that's been the case for many years now in crypto. So like, how can we offer products like that, but in a safe way? I don't think that we can do it with like unregulated CeFi or regulated CeFi. You know, maybe sometime like regulated CeFi will catch up and like they'll be able to trade perpetuals, but there's probably going to be a next thing after that, and like a next thing that people want to do in finance in general. And that's kind of the beauty of crypto, is it's enabled all this financial experimentation. And I don't think that's going to stop. So like, how can we keep up with it? I think it's through DeFi. If we can imagine this future where DeFi is totally transparent, is secure, and I think we still have, you know, a decent way to get there. I think we're doing a good job for now, and we're really pushing the bounds on what's possible. But I think like that's the only answer, and that's like the only way that we stop kind of this madness in crypto, or else it's just going to be this unending cycle of explosions and bull markets and kind of these companies and people getting elevated as demigods and stuff exploding, like regulators coming in. Like it's never going to stop, except if we have DeFi. And that's kind of the thought I keep having today. So I really feel like, you know, I think DeFi will win. Like I just can't see like any alternative to that in my mind. And I'm completely convinced of it at this point. And I think we have to think about what we're building as well. Like, the thought I keep having is like, what does win mean? Like, maybe we can define that. Like, I think win means like what will have a real like importance, like lasting change on the world. Is it centralized exchanges? Is it DeFi? Is it none of this? Like, is crypto going to die? And I think it's going to be DeFi. And I think the only way we make this real change is with DeFi. I don't think it can be made. I don't think it's possible for it to be made with centralized exchanges, with like regulated or unregulated exchanges. I think it has to be us, and it has to be DeFi. And I said things like this before, but just to reiterate, at least in my mind, it's like we have to make real big, like lasting change in the world, or at least aspire to that. Otherwise, like, what are we doing? That's not something that I'm interested in working on. So that's really positive. And I think it's really crystallized in my mind, like what we have to do and that we have a really big opportunity to do this. But, and this is like a big but, like what is the big goal for us in the near term, and kind of what does this news mean for us in the short to medium term? I just want to be very clear about this, like this news and all the stuff that's been happening with the bear markets, with like various funds exploding, like we're sort of out here being like, yeah, like look, DeFi, like everybody look at DeFi. And that's absolutely right as per the previous point. But I think there are much more important headwinds that are caused by this that will affect us much more. I think the first thing is on the policy side. I think I've mentioned some of these types of things before, but SBF was literally like thought of as the most well-regarded person in DC when it comes to crypto policy by a lot. And I think this is really not good for like crypto in the eyes of policymakers overall, because I think the knee-jerk reaction for them is probably going to be something like, well, hey, like this guy was here, like finally somebody was making sense to me in crypto, and now his company, his exchange blew up, like massive catastrophe, maybe user funds are at risk. Clearly this guy is not credible to listen to anymore. Like, what do I do? Probably regulate crypto. So I think that's kind of the knee-jerk reaction. I will say it's not all lost. I think there is also a big opportunity for us in DeFi when it comes to policy. I don't think we're going to be super successful with this in the near term, but I think we can build up to it over the long term, because like SBF had really just like lock on attention when it comes to crypto policymakers that cared about crypto, and now there's a big vacuum. So I think it's possible for us to go out and fill that vacuum, and we'll do everything we can there, but we're still very small players in this space, and like most policymakers don't even know what the heck's going on with crypto still, let alone DeFi. So that's the first thing. And that could potentially be bad for us. And I'll go through like everything in specifics, but you see me posting a lot about this kind of stuff. I think the second thing is market dynamics. I mean, just like literally look at the prices today, they're down like 20%. And it's not just prices, but I think the overall trust in crypto will continue to decrease, especially in the near term, where it's like, again, FTX had built themselves up into this brand that everybody trusted. Especially in America and some parts internationally too. And I think there'll just be a lot of people that just leave crypto overall, and the trading volumes will continue to decline. It's going to be hard to come back from that. Like there are still some people, like ourselves included, but bigger ones being like CZ and Coinbase that do have, for the most part, like trust of the industry. But I think a lot of people are just going to be like, this is getting ridiculous at this point. Like what? Possibly trust and just leave. And we've already seen that, right? Trading volumes are down. But I think there's only going to be more of that. Just like the value of the market overall, like the balance sheet, things like that being lower, and that making it harder for us to just like do all the things we might want to do. So there's a lot of really real things, but I think the biggest thing that I worry about, which like all of these things that I just mentioned are inputs to, and the big thing that kills companies is a loss of momentum. Maybe one more like input before I talk about this. Like one of the things we do have going for us is that we have a lot of runway. Like we have 200 million plus in the bank. And we've kept our burn rate really low, et cetera. So, and for a lot of companies, we would be financially worried right now. Have to like consider things like layoffs or like, you know, downsizing our focus or things like that. We're lucky we don't have to consider that, and we can keep building. But again, like that being said, I still think there's a really big risk due to loss of momentum. And I think this is something that happens over time, and it's like tough to feel in the moment, but you can look back on it and see like, oh man, like we just really like lost momentum. Like the team was less excited during these times. Like our volumes are going down. We're like losing users month over month. Like potentially the balance sheet is draining. There's all these policy developments that are like going against us. Like, man, like when are we going to catch a break? Like, is crypto really what we want to be doing? And that doesn't happen overnight. And I'm not like accusing anybody of thinking like that right now. And again, it's fine if you are, but I think that kind of stuff over time does take a really big toll, where if it's like a year, like two, potentially even like 3 years of that, where we're like, okay, we're like still building, but like our numbers are still going down. Like we see our balance sheet dwindling over time. Like we still believe, like, you know, as per the previous slides, like we're really convinced that DeFi is the answer, but like, is it going to be us? Like, yeah, maybe it's just not us. Maybe it's not right now that are the ones that win this. So that's the biggest thing that I worry about. And Ben Horowitz, I did a previous all hands where I quoted a lot from his book, like The Hard Thing of Hard Things, has like a really good chapter on this where I'd encourage you all to go out and read it. But he talks about peacetime versus wartime CEOs in his mind. And peacetime is like when everything is going well and it's like all about growing the business, et cetera. And wartime is like, shit, like, are we gonna be here in 5 years? Like, what is it? Are we gonna have sold the project, like something else like that, just lost a lot of like, you know, developer mind share, momentum, like whatever the case is. Like, first and foremost, like we gotta stop that. Like we have to like not lose. I think if the difference is like we have to win versus like we have to not lose. And like, first of all, we have to not lose in order to win. So I'm just gonna run through a couple quotes that I thought were good, because he says it better than I probably can, about like peacetime CEOs versus wartime CEOs. And this is not just for me, I think this is for everybody, because so far, like, act like a founder value. And I think we should all try to think like this. He says, peacetime CEOs know that proper protocol leads to winning. Wartime CEOs violate protocol in order to win. And maybe some big examples of this, I think you need to make big decisions that at the outset as a CEO may not be popular. I think we have started to do that. I would point as the main evidence to the decision we made and discussed before to eliminate growth. Now I think everybody's bought in, and I think we realized that that was the right decision, but that was not an obvious decision. And I think that was an example of me kind of going in and violating like what we had set the company up to do, and potentially risking a lot, but like we had to do that in order to win. Next, peacetime CEOs focus on the big picture and empowers their people to make detailed decisions. Wartime CEOs care about, quote, a speck of dust on a gnat's ass if it interferes with the prime directive. And just some examples of this too, like, I think I need to keep doing this. Like, I think we've mostly like followed through on the elimination of growth, but I think there are some things, not to keep picking on this, but just using this as an example, or other things too, where I see like that creeping into mindshare. And I feel like I've been taking a really hard line against it recently. And a lot of times my frustration will come out, but I think that's really important that we keep doing that. Not just me, but everybody. Like, we need to only be focused on really the most important things. Next quote, peacetime CEOs always has a contingency plan. Wartime CEOs know that sometimes you have to roll a hard six. I agree with this one as well. Like, we have to make some big bets. We can have some contingency plans if things go wrong, but you know, we got to play the probabilities, and if they roll against us, then so be it. Like, we made all the best decisions that we could, and we have to live with that, and we have to accept that we might not win, but we'll set ourselves up as best we can to do so, and we have to survive in the meantime. Peacetime CEOs know what to do with a big advantage, and a wartime CEO is paranoid. Like, you always got to be thinking about ways that you may die, and let that not be the case. Peacetime CEOs strive not to use profanity, and wartime CEOs sometimes use profanity purposely. Peacetime CEOs try to expand the market, and wartime CEOs try to win the market. And I think that's instructive as we go forwards too. Like, for us, winning the market is expanding into the CeFi market. Like, we can't possibly sustain ourselves on just the DeFi market for the next 5 to 10 years. But I think looking at winning that market rather than expanding the entire crypto market overall is instructive. Peacetime CEOs strive to tolerate deviations from the plan when coupled with effort and creativity. Wartime CEO is completely intolerant. I'm still coming to terms with this one too, because I think that like promoting creativity and effort is really important, and we definitely want to keep doing that. But I think the point here is that like I and the rest of the company, we just need to be completely intolerant to our focus and make sure that we're only doing the most important things and that we're executing, and that first and foremost, we're not dying. Again, I think we're doing a good job of this. Like we're pretty laser focused on V4 as the big bet, like hard six that we're going for. But I think we need to keep being vigilant. Couple more. Peacetime CEOs never raise their voice. Wartime CEOs rarely speak in a normal tone. You know, I'm somewhere in the middle on this one, but hopefully you can see, especially in the past couple months, me getting a little bit more animated and emotional, because I feel like I am, and I feel like this stuff is important. Peacetime CEOs strive to minimize conflict. Wartime CEOs heighten the contradictions. Peacetime CEO strives for broad-based buy-in, and wartime CEOs neither indulges consensus building nor tolerates disagreements. This is, I think, maybe stated a little bit harshly, but I agree with the sentiment too. Like, I will always tolerate disagreements, but not committing, as we kind of discussed in the previous all hands. Like, once a decision is made, we need to go with it. And there's no room for kind of arguing after the decision has been made. And that's basically it. So I think we just need to keep this kind of wartime survival mentality for the next year or two. And I think we've started to do that and we've done a good job, but like everything, like I seriously mean like everything that we're doing has to go towards this like top priority of surviving in the next year or two. And we also have to adjust our expectations, and it's hard to do, right? Because here we are sitting, thinking to ourselves, even in the previous slides, that like, oh, this is a huge opportunity. Like, let's go get it. Let's go like take market share. Like DeFi is clearly the big thing long-term, but we have to like pump the brakes in on our expectations in the next 2 years and kind of not let ourselves get disenchanted from that thought and kind of that vision long-term. And that's a lot easier said than done. And it's tough for me too. Like, you know, I'm obviously probably one of the most committed, hopefully, to DYDX. But I've been doing this for like 5 years. And sometimes I think to myself, like, damn, dude, like, am I going to spend like my whole career on this? Like, I really think I'm right. But like, am I going to spend like 10, 20 years like doing this one thing? Like, what if I'm wrong? And there are like moments when, you know, it's not usually that something happens and I'm like, oh, fuck it. Like, this is terrible. Like, I'm out after whatever happened today. It's just like, you know, I look back and it's like 2-3 years and, you know, there's some momentum gains, but it's like, we're still not hitting. Like 5 years ago, I was out here sitting, saying the same thing I'm saying to you guys today, where like, we're going to be the biggest crypto exchange in 5 years. And I said that 5 years ago, and it's like, clearly that's not the case. And we've made a lot of progress and there is real reasons to keep believing, but it's just time like wears on you. And you have to have that survival mentality in the bear markets. And I think we do. And there is a lot of just sort of momentum that goes against that, right? Where it's like, oh man, we're like not executing enough. Like, shit, let's go like hire like a ton more people or something like that. And like, maybe we want to hire more people, but like, we got to rein it in and know that priority number one is just keeping the team small enough that we can have these conversations. We can know each other. We can like build up that trust through kind of knowing each other in person, and we can maintain this momentum in the next few years. Cause if we don't do that, we lose. And this is probably the biggest thing that I wanted to talk about. Like, I've been feeling this for a while, but I've been hesitant to kind of communicate this to everybody. I think I was wrong on the timing, like even more wrong than I initially thought. Like, you know, my whole like 5 years thing, it's possible, but I think that's probably not like the biggest expected value play for when is DeFi going to be really big. I think, you know, as evidenced in what I was talking about in the previous slides, there's just so many short-term dynamics that are going against us. Like, the tech is really hard. Like, literally 5 years ago, I was out here thinking that bridging would be a mostly solved problem in 2 or 3 years, and fast forward to today and progress has been made, but like, we're by no means in a place where we can build like a great spot trading exchange or something like that, probably. the tech does keep increasing, but I think these things just take longer than people think, right? It's even as somebody that has seen these boom and bust cycles play out time and time again in the same industry, it's like literally impossible, like not to get too excited in the bear markets, and also potentially like too low in the bear markets, too high in the bull markets, too low in the bears. But there's a lot going against us, like the policy side right now. Nothing backbreaking, but there's just a lot of headwinds with kind of the stuff we post about that generally is not good for crypto or not good for DeFi or some combination of the two. Like the market is down, both the crypto and the tech markets. Like how could we have predicted that tech market valuations would just collapse by like 75 to 90% and been able to plan for that? Like these things all just make it a lot harder in the near term. And I think first of all, like the thing that the effect of that is that first of all, we need to focus in wartime mode on survival. But second of all, like what does that focus on survival actually cost you? Even if you are successful in that survival, it costs you time basically. And it costs like you're in this survival mode for like 2 or 3 years and you're not out there growing the market and doing all these things that you might want to do. And you can do those things after you survive and hopefully the market comes back if you're right about the bets that you make, but it takes longer. And I think the thing that makes me feel better about this, about our potential even given this, is I think we've done a really, really good job of staying long-term focused. I really can't think of almost any other projects in crypto that's longer-term focused than us. And I think this kind of starts with me and extends to all the rest of you. But just we're out here like all the time talking about like we're building for 5 years from now, we're building for the long term. Like we're not going to expand our headcount. We're not going to go crazy. We're not going to take huge risks that might not pay off in the long term. So I think we've done a really good job staying long term focused. But one of the things about this that I kind of want to communicate on this 5 to like 10 to 20 year focus change is that it really scares me. And it's hard to like even admit that it scares me too. And the reason that it scares me is not so much because like, you know, oh man, I don't want to like spend 10 years on this or whatever. But like, I know I can keep a company together. At least I have high confidence that I can keep the company together for 5 years. Like, you know, have enough runway. I've already done it for 5 years in the past. And I feel like I can do a good job, like setting the vision, like maintaining momentum, yada, yada. But I don't know if I can for 10 plus years. And like, I honestly don't know. Like, I don't have a solution to this. I think it's definitely possible. Like there have been companies from the dot-com bubble that fast forward 20 years later, when things actually really started taking off, are still successful, but it's really hard and it's really rare. But yeah, like I think it's just important to be honest about how I'm thinking about this too. And I really think that if we are just looking at the level of change that we want to affect as per like the previous slides, like we want to build, like what we were trying to do is like so big and so huge. Like we want to build a new, better financial system for the world. And that's really hard to do. And there's a lot of really tough challenges we have to solve in the near term. Like what does a decentralized organization that executes well look like? How do we solve things like MEV? A lot of stuff like that. How can we potentially like get more capital to continue to operate for the long term? And all these questions are hard. And I think it's possible, like I would put the range of like, okay, let's just like suppose that we were successful and we hit our goals. I would put like the range of timings on that outcome, probably somewhere in the range of like 5 to 20 years, which I realize is a huge window, but I think it's just really hard to predict some of these things. And I think we have to, like, if I'm just using like the moving expected value in my mind of like when we can be successful, I really think if we want to affect like that level of change, 10 to 20 years is really the time horizon that we have to keep looking at. So it's scary to admit. And it's more scary because it's not just me, at least for me and my job. Maybe some of the rest of you feel this as well, but I think I especially feel this. Like I feel a lot of ownership and responsibility towards you, like to our current and future users, to build a great product for them. And, you know, as per like the previous slides, like today, I just really feel like there is no answer to this except for DeFi. So like, I feel a lot of responsibility to the space overall, and I'm not holding myself as like the only guy who can possibly solve this, but I think I have one of the better platforms and like opportunities to go out and take a shot at it. So I feel like it's important to make that shot count. I feel like what we're doing is really important, and I really don't want to fail, which is, I think, a reasonable feeling. But like, I just keep coming back to this thought that I've kind of been feeling this for a while, but I really feel it today. Like, DeFi will win. It has to. Like, I just feel like it will win. Like, I can't see like any financial system, like, even if we zoom out even further, like 50 to 100 years from now, it's like, I kind of see two outcomes. Like, either things stay exactly the same as they are right now, which is like, that's not really the way the world works. Like, things progress over time, right? Especially influenced by technology. And then I look at alternatives and I'm like, what could potential alternatives be? And there's nothing else except for DeFi in my mind right now. And I think that that's just a huge opportunity. One of the things I think about with this that kind of allays some of my fears somewhat, is I think about like, what would I do if DYDX failed just because of timing reasons, where it's like, yeah, we were basically right. Like 20 years from now, we'll look back and we'll be like, damn, dude, like we thought of this like 20 years ago. And we were out here like doing it. We pushed for like a lot of the things. Maybe we weren't the ones to win. Like, we couldn't hold the company together for long enough. But like, I sometimes think to myself, like, what would I keep doing after DYDX? Like, I don't know. I'd probably try to go start like another company. And I think about like, what would I do? And I'm pretty sure I would just keep doing the same thing, basically. Like, maybe we run out of money and, you know, maybe we run out of momentum and people leave, and like, that's okay. Like, there's no expectation that you guys are in this for the next 5 to 10 years. And I know you all go on to do great things, and it doesn't have to be DYDX, but there will be some core of like people that is moving. Some people will come, some people will go that is DYDX. But if that kind of goes away, like, I'd feel sad about that. But I think I would just go back to like coding, and I'd probably just keep coding the thing myself, or at least that's the way I feel right now. And that gives me like a lot of confidence about what we're doing here. Like, if I feel that level of confidence where like I've gone through this, you know, okay, fast forward 5 years from now, like we ran out of money, like whatever happens, that the company shuts down, and I'm like, well, okay, I've been working on this for 10 years at this point, and I still feel like, okay, like, yeah, I lost all my, from my perspective, I like lost all my resources, right? I lost all my like engineers to go code the thing, my good like product people to like think about like what we should build, like good research people that can help think about these hard problems. But I think it would just go back and like code it myself, and try to code the next version. And maybe it takes me like 4 years to develop instead of 1 year, but I'm still pretty convinced that this is a huge opportunity. And I'm kind of willing to commit to that. So this is not a speech to be like, yeah, Antonio is willing to commit to this, so like, damn it, you should too. It's more just to say, like, I think that this gives me a good amount of peace that like, even if this is a 10 to 20 year play, I still think what we're doing is really important. I still think we have a good opportunity to go out and capture a lot of value. And I still think what we're doing is meaningful. And overall, like, I just think that we're right. Like, I think this is the way finance should be built. And I think we're doing really important things to go out and make that a reality. So that's basically it. I know that was a long 45-minute monologue, but that is kind of how I'm feeling after today. I think a lot of the stuff I was kind of thinking and feeling already, but the stuff with FTX really crystallized it for me. And I think it's worth sharing and worth preserving too. So it's kind of why I wanted to record it. So that's basically it. Anything, any other thoughts or questions based off of that?
First of all, I just want to say, you know, thank you for sharing your feelings on this, Antonio. I'm sure other folks who've worked at other companies know how rare it is to have like a company CEO share the emotional side of things instead of just like what's happening day to day. I know a lot of things are happening real time and we're all still processing it, but I had actually a couple questions about the main points you brought up. You had a point that you brought up in terms of like brand is everything. There's like been this meme on Twitter about how like if you become the main character in crypto, you get shot. And you know, the memes sort of punchlines like that's kind of like what SBF did. And then you know the premise is that you know CZ maybe next in terms of him stepping up and painting a target on his back. So one question I have is like, you know, how do you think about like building a brand and getting more awareness for DYDX? And does that also paint a target on our back at the same time?
So maybe, like, I think it does paint a little bit more of a target on our back, but I think we've had enough success to this point where pretty much everybody that knows what's going on knows DYDX and knows at least what we're doing at a high level. So I don't see that as a huge risk. I think potentially there could become more risk if you get to the point where you are one of, call it like the top 3 to 5 companies slash people that crypto people know and care about. But I think we're pretty far away from that. So maybe we can deal with that if and when it arises. I also just think as per like the previous points on like the three options, the like unregulated CeFi, regulated CeFi, or DeFi, call it DeFi done well. I think that DeFi will be different if it's done well too. Like I think if we truly are building things in like a transparent, secure way, like there still may be temptations. Like I'm not just gonna sit here and say that I'm just like a better human being than like SBF or CZ or whatever. Like maybe I am, but it's sort of irrelevant. Like there still probably will be temptations for us to go out and do sketchy things or, you know, not be transparent. But if we set these like invariants for ourselves where like we literally can't take our customer funds, for example, and like go lend them out on our balance sheet, and that's just like an invariant we have to work with. So like, damn it, no matter how much Antonio or whoever might want to, like we can't do it. I think that if we just set these values for ourselves and we are really transparent about everything, I don't know. I mean, it's maybe a little bit risky to sit here and say like things will be different, but I do think that things will be different for DeFi, like built right. Clearly there have been some DeFi platforms that have exploded like Terra or whatever too. But I think those kind of violate, in my mind at least, the like safety prerequisite of what we're doing, where like clearly what they built is not financially sound and is not safe. So I think as long as we don't fall into some of those traps and we push forward in building DeFi the right way, I'm not super concerned about it.
Cool. It, you know, to your point that you bring up, like the way I conceptualize the advantages of DeFi is one, transparency. Like people can see exactly how many, where their money is essentially. And second is like, you know, not only are you taking this approach of, hey, trust us, we're not doing anything sketchy with your money. It's like, we can't do anything sketchy with your money because of the code and the protocol, right? If like centralized exchanges, let's say unregulated centralized exchanges like Binance end up addressing the transparency point, right? It's whole like CZ's like, hey, proof that, you know, reserves, proof of reserves for Binance. If they address the transparency point, but not the, you know, code point to prevent bad behavior through code, do you think that we'll get centralized exchanges to still a good state just purely through the transparency?
I don't think so, because I think, first of all, it's just literally impossible, even if they really wanted to, for centralized exchanges to be even close to as transparent as DeFi. Right? Like, I sent out a tweet about this earlier. This was a thought from Brendan and Evo, not from myself, but I'll repeat it anyways. Like, let's just take an example. Like, let's say Binance posts all of the addresses that they control, and they're like, look, here is our proof of reserves. We have like 20 billion in crypto sitting right here. Like, we say we're not lending it out or anything like that. But there's literally no way to know besides an audit if that 20 billion equates to the sum of all of their deposits or like the sum of all account values on Binance. Right. Or like you can't possibly know what like lending obligations that they may have or other things that exist on their balance sheet. And maybe they can go down the routes of like getting super audited and things like that. But I've just been in the space for like a long time, and I really don't think that people will care that much. And I think if there are exchanges that are operating in centralized but kind of sketchy ways that aren't doing these transparency things, people will still use them. And I think that even if Binance kind of hamstrings himself by like trying to get regulated or doing more transparency and starts to lose to some of these other people, again, as per the previous point I was making, there'll be a lot of temptation for them to do the things that these other centralized, unregulated exchanges may be doing, like whoever's doing the worst or like most risk on thing to be able to compete. And I think it's just going to be hard for them. So I think it's just fundamentally different. And yeah, I'm not super concerned about like Binance or whoever else doing like an about face and like trying to have more transparency to be able to compete with DeFi. I think like this isn't what you asked, but like one other thing we were talking about at launch that I thought was interesting is pretty much everybody that's left in crypto too has publicly committed at least to supporting DeFi long term. Like even CZ, like Coinbase, like FTX was kind of the main holdout that didn't really support them long term. And that's not to say they definitely will. Like they absolutely care about their own businesses more than they care about DeFi. But I think it's an interesting point where like DeFi has almost become a really big part of the brand narrative for crypto overall, right? It's like, why do we even care about crypto? It's like, okay, we're like building an open financial system for the world. And you can't do that without DeFi. I mean, maybe some Bitcoiners think you can, but like normally finds decentralized like store of value super interesting, like anything bigger than that. And really you can't do that without thinking about DeFi. And I think a lot of the spaces, at least from like a brand side, come around to that at this point. I think people get frustrated when they're like, this is the goal or like the vision. And it's like, hold on, like Aiden, like Antonio, Vitalik, whoever, like you're out here saying that DeFi is going to create an open financial system for the world. And it's like the products are like a piece of shit right now, or, you know, you're capitulating or whatever on various legal issues or whatever may be going on in the short term. Like, what the hell? But I think that's natural. And it's just like it's even hard for us to like rock this, right? It's just hard as like a person to like think about what is like, think about things on like a 10 to 20 year time horizon. Like that's probably like almost like half of the life that I have left or so. I'm like, okay, you're gonna like spend like 20 years of the life that I have left, like working on this one thing. And it's hard to think about things on that time scale. And it's even harder for people that don't have like a vested interest like we do or are working full time on this to think about things or care about things even on that long of a time scale. And I think that leads to really big disconnects between like us or Uniswap or whoever else is really big in the DeFi space and people's expectations, and naturally will lead to boom and bust cycles, right? I think literally this like 10 to 20 year thing is like the biggest thing that causes these boom to bust cycles, where it's like, okay, first of all, like thing is invented, like everybody gets super excited about it. A lot of what you get excited about it is right. Like if you go back and like look at the Ethereum white paper, they called out a lot of the applications that are big now in crypto. And I think will continue to be even bigger long-term. But people get excited about it for like a year in crypto. That means like speculation prices, whatever. But like you only have people's attention for so long, right? And it's like, you can't keep people excited. It's hard to keep people excited even internally. Like hell, it's like even hard to keep myself like excited about this for like on a 20 year time horizon. So you can't keep people excited about it for that long. So it like, you know, crashes, and then due to like all this contagion and whatever else, and just the way human emotions work, it crashes lower than it should be. But like really everything is like up and to the right, but it's like, you know, up and down and boom and bust. So I think that's kind of the biggest thing that's causing these cycles in crypto, is just that like, yes, like we're right, there's something here. It's not just like all circular trading. It shouldn't just be like written off. Like we should look at this trend long-term, but it's 10 to 20 years from now. It's not this year, it's not next year, it's not 5 years from now. It's like 10 to 20 years from now when we'll look back and be like, yeah, like we actually have created something that has real value in the world on like a global scale. And it's just hard to like, yes, it's hard to think about and commit to things on that long of a time horizon, I think. Anyone else? Okay. Cool. Thanks, guys. Well, thank you for humoring me. Hopefully that was useful and exciting to keep building.